Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm gonna make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you wanna get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of The Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play The Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Our yoga instructor challenged us to find inner peace. I found it faster than anyone. After 4 seconds, I stood up and screamed,
I found nirvana! I win!
They asked me to leave. I guess they don't respect winning. Bet365 does, though. New customers get $200 in bonus bets just for betting $10. Namaste, losers. Bet365. Winning is everything. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-MY-RESET. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Faceoff comes back in the AV zone, and that will do it. Colorado comes away with a 3-2 victory here tonight over the Nashville Predators.
Yeah, obviously, I mean, we thought we scored, but then they called it back for goal interference, and Arkell actually did a really good job of not getting scored on. And then, we had 1 minute left to pull the goalie and try to score goals to get an empty netter, and then, yeah, it's tough to get two goals in, like, 45 seconds.
Just a few seconds remaining for Nashville to find the equalizer, and he blows the final whistle. Atlanta United in front of 59,000 fans in Nashville's debut. Atlanta United takes all 3 points. A night to remember in Nashville, regardless of the results. But the final score, Atlanta United 2 and Nashville Soccer Club 1.
It was the same result, but two very different feelings following Saturday night's results here in our city. Welcome into Morning Drive, Robbie Stanley, alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 today. Alex, what's going on, man?
Good morning, man. Rainy start to your day. Get your rain jacket if you're still in the house.
You got an oar inside the house. You might need it, too.
Well, I was happy. We had a little sun yesterday. Made me feel a little bit better about what I think is the Preds getting hosed on a game-tying goal. Now, who's to say where it would have gone from there, but... interesting call there. Of course, one of those things that everybody asks about after the game, and you really don't get a ton of answers on. Nashville SC shows out. Lady Vols salvage their NCAA tournament path with a win over last-second win over not that good of a team this weekend, but 55,000 at Nissan Stadium grabs some headlines. An interesting weekend of sports in Tennessee, but I think the whole weekend sort of encompasses what a great sports town this has become.
Yeah, I think so, and... starting with the Preds game, it was just a really – it was an interesting game on Saturday night because I thought the Predators, for the most part, actually played pretty well. I mean, you look at the score, losing 3-2 to Colorado on Saturday night. Colorado's a good team. They won 8 games in a row on the road, I think 6 games in a row overall. So they're playing really well right now. Their goaltender, Pavel Francouz, has played really, really well in the absence of Philip Grubauer. Remember, Grubauer, their starting goaltender, is hurt.
Kind of reminds you of Jordan Binnington a little bit last year.
It kind of does. And
really making a surge.
They've played really well as of late, but I thought for the most part, if you look at the numbers, the shots on goal, the possession time, the quality chances, pretty much everything, the Predators played one of their better games in a long time against Colorado. And then to lose that way, where you look at it and it's 2-1, Victor Arvidsson gets the breakaway, it makes it 2-1, you feel like, okay, you're back in this thing, you've got a chance in the third period. Dante Fabbro scores, and they immediately wave the goal off. And I will say this, from watching it live, it did look like Blackwell just bowled over the goaltender. But then you go back and look at it on the replay, and obviously the officials don't have the benefit of looking at it on a replay when they make the call. Goaltender's out of the net, and Nikita Zadorov from the Avalanche basically just shoves Colin Blackwell into the goalie, and the penalty has been called at that point. You can't go back and review it. That's a tough way to lose if you're a Predators fan.
Well, two thoughts. I do agree that on the whole the Preds played fine. Colorado is a good team. You're not going to win all of those, right? You know, even as you're pushing here for the playoffs, you need every point win you can get. You're just not going to win all those. Preds played fine. I don't have any overall beef with the effort or execution on Saturday night. Now, the question with the penalty, and Okay, so let's assume that you're not sure that Zadorov pushed him with enough force in order to where he should have hit the goalie like that, or he should have been more mindful of his space, whatever your interpretation of that rule would be. Where is he supposed to go? Let's just think, I mean, physics here. The guy is standing about 6 inches a foot in front of the goaltender. Another guy backs into him. How are you supposed to react? I mean, even just from a very non-rule book, practical, borderline physics standpoint, where are you supposed to go in that situation? Now, we're going to get into it a little bit more and maybe spend an entire segment on this, but should officials be held more accountable is the question. In a case like that, you really don't get much explanation in the NHL. You know, if you're a league putting on these games for your fans and you're trying to continue to grow your league and you leave everybody in that arena walking out with a weird taste in their mouth like, man, did we just get hosed there? We kind of get screwed there? And whether they think they did or not, I mean, you kind of leave with an unsatisfactory feeling leaving that arena on Saturday night. And at least a little transparency from officials gives you some sort of answer. This is how we interpreted it. This is why we interpreted it. Whether you like that or not, at least you can rest on at least knowing where they were coming from.
Well, and the good news is they got some help over the weekend. So Minnesota lost last night against Washington. Winnipeg lost the other night. So even after losing the game on Saturday night, the Predators still hold the second wild card spot in the Western Conference, so they didn't lose any ground over the weekend. Vancouver now actually is the first wild card team. Calgary jumped ahead of Vancouver this weekend in the standing. So still, I think, regardless of the way the game ended on Saturday night and the results, the controversy that's come with it, which we'll get into here in just a few minutes, you feel pretty good if you're the Predators that at least you didn't lose any ground, and you've got a good opportunity this week with a big game tonight against the Edmonton Oilers at home, and then a massive game tomorrow on the road in Minnesota with a team that's right there with you. They had a chance to jump you last night. Minnesota did. They ended up losing 4-3 to the Washington Capitals. So Minnesota's still 1 point behind you. But we've talked about, you know, having games in hand on pretty much every team. Minnesota is really the one team that you don't. I mean, they've played one more game than you have now, and you end up playing that tonight and then playing them again tomorrow. So that part to me is the good news for the Predators this weekend, that at least you didn't lose any ground in the Western Conference in terms of the playoff race.
Goes to show you how tight the league is, too. I mean, coming into the season, you had Nashville being picked maybe as a Stanley Cup favorite, at least dark horse, and you had Minnesota. They might be the worst team in the league. You know, it wasn't uncommon to hear opinions akin to that. And here you are, you know, 64 games in for the Predators, and you're separated by 1 point. You know, it speaks to just how much parity there is in that league. But think if this was the NFL, right? The Preds lose a crucial game against a division rival, a team that they've played recently in the playoffs, and you lose it off of a controversial call, or at least you didn't get a chance to tie the game. I mean, that is akin to the NHL or the NFL. And imagine, you know, all of the missed calls that people complain about in the NFL, and I'm not praising their referees, but even a league that struggles with transparency gives you some sort of explanation when a big call totally affects the outcome of the game, right? Even if it is, you know, week four against the Bengals in Nissan Stadium and nobody, you know, is, you know, losing too much sleep over that one individual outcome, you get some sort of explanation when there is a critical call that may have been wrong. And maybe your experience is different. You don't often get that from the NHL.
Well, you'll get like this release statement of the hockey ops department reviewed so-and-so, but it usually is a lot of words on a page that really says nothing. I mean, that's basically what it boils down to. And there wasn't even one of those on Saturday night, because once you make that call as a penalty, it's one thing if you call it no goal and it's just incidental contact and you can go back and review it. But once you make that call and you call it a penalty, which they did, Colin Blackwell went to the box for 2 minutes after that play, there's nothing you can do about it at that point. Like, you can't review it.
Who thought that was a good rule? If we're going to call a penalty, we're going to make sure we can't write in, our error.
Yeah.
That's
something you might have to take a look at.
Certainly. In every sport, any time there was a penalty of any kind or any sort of infraction, if you said, well, that play's not reviewable, you wipe out half of your available reviewable plays. I mean, in the NHL, there is a lot of, you know, free skating, relatively few stoppages of play. Sometimes you can go minutes at a time, the game doesn't stop. What you want to review quite often is something where there's a penalty on it. I mean, short of offsides or the occasional goaltender interference where it is incidental contact, How often do you see that, though? Yeah. I mean, you don't see that many reviews in hockey, which I don't hate. It, you know, it does slow down games, but the fact that you can't review a penalty, that doesn't make any sense, and somebody sitting in the league office has to look at that and realize it.
It was a really cool day on Saturday, and I got to check out kind of the tailgate scene before I went over to the Preds game for Nashville SC in their game against Atlanta United. 59,000 people in attendance at Nissan Stadium. It just looked so cool, and unfortunately I didn't get a chance to go over there for the actual game, obviously because I was working the Preds game, but just from watching it on TV, I had it on in the press box, had it on in the media room, and from a bunch of friends I've talked to, a bunch of videos I've seen on social media, I thought the scene and the crowd looked about as good as it could have looked there. It looked awesome.
What more could you could have asked for? Maybe 10 more thousand to really fill up the stadium, or maybe even less than that. It was great. Now, the fact that some people will point to you had 30,000 fans or 25,000 or 20,000 fans from Atlanta come up, definitely a decent Atlanta contingent that came up to root for their team. But the fact that this city is attracting 20,000 visiting fans, 35,000, whatever you want to put the number at, of your own fans, 25,000, is incredible and definitely speaks to the potential of that sport. There would be a lot of things in this city where it doesn't matter what it is, you wouldn't be attracting 55,000 on an opening night. I mean, there is a contingent of sports fans, and I think soccer fans are quite often unique, like not a ton of not as much crossover as you get between the NBA and the NFL or Major League Baseball or even hockey. You know, soccer fans are passionate about that sport, and that passion you can't buy as a league, as a team. If you're John Ingram, that is so invaluable. I mean, anything other than impressed by that crowd, you can be. And you got to consider, too, I mean, if you have 25,000, 30,000 Nashville SC fans, well, that's going to fill up the stadium that you just built. There you go right there. Now, of course, it's your first opener ever. You would hope that you would be able to fill up the stands. And then you look at the gameplay. I mean, Nashville lost, but I think they gave up only two or three shots the whole game. The problem is both went in.
Yeah.
From a perspective of just the on-field product, that was no domination by Atlanta. You kind of eked that one out. They're a really good team, and that's fine. That's what good teams do. But you got to give that an A for right out of the gate, about as good as you can do.
Nashville SC club owner John Ingram is going to join us at 8 o'clock today here on Morning Drive. Munson, you were there on Saturday. Just kind of what was that experience like? It just looked so cool from the environment on TV that I saw and being around the tailgate. People were fired up on Saturday.
Yeah, I mean, just being around the kind of the process last year, when I started here in Nashville, I kind of started to gravitate towards that soccer, and just to see how that moment of them getting ready for it to actually happening, to this actually being a real thing, was the satisfaction part for me. Now, and it's one of those situations where you look at the crowd and you're like, man, I hate I got to be up here in this press box. No offense,
I know,
to the
right?
press box. No offense to the press box. It's awesome. But, you know, I would have loved to be down there when Walker Zimmerman scored that first goal and just seeing how that crowd reacted. And the crowd stayed in the entire game. And that's one thing that Dax was talking about after the game, of how this can kind of dictate games, how the crowd can really play into a lot of their games. And obviously, they couldn't get that win on Saturday. But in the future, especially when they get their new stadium, how that crowd atmosphere that they brought Saturday can affect games down the road. So, you know, I think it was a great crowd. Kudos to Nashville. There's been a lot of soccer here. A lot of soccer. Yeah. Team USA has came here multiple times, and this is the largest crowd for a soccer match in the state of
what
Tennessee.
What would you compare the level of noise when Walker Zimmerman scored that first goal? And also, you love it that it's Walker Zimmerman, too. He's their highest paid player. Great for that guy to come out and get you off to a good start. What would you compare the noise of that crowd to? Did you get a good sense? Was, you know, akin to, I don't know, the eruption that you get, you know, when the Titans score the game-winning goal 2 minutes left? I mean, the look of the stands looked like it was absolute mayhem.
Yeah, it was. It was. And then, and mind you, you know, they're down one. They're down one goal. They go into halftime with that goal. you know, tying the game up against an Atlanta United team that's got a lot of, you know, prestige now in the last 2 years. They won the MLS championship. So obviously, if you're having a competitive back and forth contest with a team as good as Atlanta United, of course, when you get the first goal out the way, we're not only get the first goal out the way, we just tied the game, and it's, and we're going into half 1-1, you know, going into the second half with, you know, some momentum that we can probably carry on. But obviously, it didn't play out in that favor. So, yeah, I mean, especially when you look at the side where, like, the roadies and everybody, like, hangs out at, and their section of the stands, like, it's just crazy. So I can just imagine when they get their own stadium, that's going to be an insane.
And that's when you can really customize the in-game environment, too, and take that to the next level.
Yeah, absolutely.
I mean, the team can really do a number once you've got your own venue to make that an incredible atmosphere.
Yep. Big congrats to the city of Nashville for the show they put on Saturday at Nissan Stadium. Really, really cool environment to see. When we come back, we mentioned the goaltender interference penalty earlier that robbed the Predators on Saturday night. Why is that penalty not reviewable when called? We'll get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tough loss for the Predators on Saturday night to the Colorado Avalanche. 3-2, final score. And at that point in the game, it was a 2-1 game in the third period. Victor Arvidsson, who you just heard there, just scored the goal to make it 2-1. He got a breakaway opportunity. And the Predators, it felt like they were putting some attack together. They were really generating some pressure in the offensive zone. They had some momentum and some energy to them after Arvidsson's goal there. And Fabbro shoots the puck from the point. It goes in and immediately is waved off by the officials. And you go back and look at it, and Francois in net is on the edge of the goal crease. I guess you could make an argument he's still in it. Blackwell is pushed and kind of guided into him by Nikita Zadorov from the Colorado Avalanche, and makes contact with a goaltender. The puck goes in the net. Immediately it's waved off. And not only is it waved off in terms of incidental contact, it's called a penalty on Blackwell. So when that happens, you cannot review it. You go look at the rule, and it says, in all cases, I think this is rule 69.2 in the NHL rulebook, in all cases in which an attacking player initiates intentional or deliberate contact with a goaltender, whether or not the goalkeeper is inside or outside the goal crease, and whether or not a goal is scored, the attacking player will receive a penalty. So the referees determined there that intentional and deliberate contact was made by Colin Blackwell. And I just, for the life of me, can't figure out how that's the case. You go back and watch it, Alex. I mean, that's a huge call. That's a gigantic call in a spot in the season where the Predators need every single point they can get. And to lose in that fashion, I know just from talking to some Preds fans after the game, is incredibly frustrating this time of year.
Rule 69.2. You had to have that in front of you, unless you've got the rule book memorized.
I do not have the rule book memorized.
Probably
I barely have my name memorized.
Look,
this
here's
time
the
of the
problem.
Morning.
It does not matter how you write it up, what number you ascribe to it, what the rule is going to be. If you have a play like that has the ability in the last, let's just say you want to make a call, let's say last 5 minutes of the third period. There, if you have to make a special rule for that, when there's a play of that magnitude that you think has a decent chance to decide the game, you should be able to review it. If you don't want, for the first, 55 minutes of the game, if you think that slows the game down or whatever you think, whenever people in Toronto are sitting up there and ascribing as a reason for not being able to review that, the last 5 minutes, that play has got to be reviewed. And even if you review it and make the wrong call or make a call that we don't agree with, at least you had a chance to look at it.
Yeah.
And if you're in anything, work, your family, your life, you want something that when you make a mistake, most people want that mistake to be held accountable, where you have a chance to right your error. It's not a it doesn't need to be a pride thing for the officials. If you're able to right your error, you at the end of the day are doing a better job. If I came on the air and read wrong stats over and over and over, you know, but I didn't go back to look at them, you know, just I thought that's what it was. That doesn't make any sense. It doesn't make any sense in this scenario either.
And I would hope that if you're an official, you would want it to be right, too. It saves you. I get it. In that situation, things happen so fast, especially in hockey. Things happen so quickly that sometimes you are forced to make a bang-bang call. And really all you have to go on there if you're an official, especially with how quickly these plays develop, okay, but Colin Blackwell just ran over the goaltender. Like, that's what you see in real time.
Yeah,
because
live,
that's what,
you see the goalie on his back.
That's what I saw in real time. And then you go back and look at it, and you realize, okay, well, yeah, there's a reason he ran into the goaltender. It's because this, like, 6'5" behemoth of a man just shoved him into it. And that's a big difference. So I would think that the officials themselves would want it to be reviewed and taken a look at.
In the NHL, you might know this. Does each official have assigned something that they have to look at, like in the NFL? You know, there's a guy looking at the line. There's a guy looking at the snap. I mean, in the NFL, if you're not looking at the puck, that's going to be hard for one thing. I mean, you get taken out in the head. But is there somebody that's supposed to be looking at the net at all times?
Yeah,
or is he following the pace of play?
Yeah, I mean, there's somebody that's looking at the net. So you've got two linesmen, two officials. You know, the linesmen obviously handle the offsides and things like that. But the officials are looking for penalties around the net, especially when there's a big scrum in front of the net like that. There are probably a couple officials watching that play.
I guess I just find it hard to believe that official was actually looking at those two guys right before that action occurred to really know what happened there. You have to be looking at Zadorov. You have to be looking at Colin Blackwell and see whatever, force of reaction there is from one of them hitting the other one. I find it hard to believe that that guy was looking at that right before that. No, I think he catches it. You know, he sees it out of the corner of his eye because I'm sure he's a good official and makes a quick snap call. But if you don't see the start of that action,
you're out of luck.
It's almost impossible to get that right every time.
Yeah.
Almost impossible.
And after the play, the officials did go over to the Predators bench and start giving an explanation to Predators coach John Hines. Hines, after the game, was asked if he was satisfied with the explanation he received. Here's what he had to say.
Well, it doesn't really matter if I'm satisfied because the call is what it is, So I can disagree or not, but it's over now. So, I think you have to understand what happens in those situations and how to be able to respond. But I don't think my opinion of the call really matters at this point.
And I was at that press conference, and my interpretation of that answer was, Lord, no, I wasn't satisfied by it, but I'm not going to sit here and get fined over it.
I'd rather keep my $20,000 or $10,000, whatever they would have found. Of course. In the last 5 minutes, look, if anyone is listening thinks this is a bad idea, in the last 5 minutes of the game, be able to review it. Now, that is not a perfect rule. Even if you only did in the last 5 minutes, the Predators could have scored that goal. They could have had 17 minutes left on the clock, and then you play to a draw the rest of the way. And in hindsight, you say, man, that really cost us the game.
Yeah.
But there has to be some level of accountability. The fact that it is just whatever happens in a sport that is moving perhaps as fast as any, probably faster than any other sport. You're on ice for one thing. How fast is that puck coming? It is coming at times as fast as a major league pitcher's pitch.
Yep.
I mean, I can't imagine that is not something that they will look at eventually. And it seems like this year, two or three times, the Predators have been on sort of an iffy call and on the wrong end of it. Now, maybe it's a classic fallacy of a fan's mind that it seems like you're always on the wrong end of it. You could probably remind me of a couple of incidences where the Preds have had a call go their way, and there certainly have this year, but it seems like two or three times I've watched a game, left a game this year feeling like, I really feel like the officials had an outcome on that game, which is not what you want.
No,
you want the players
to
have that out.
Everybody will say the comeback to that will be, the players had, 58 other minutes in the game to get the job done. And I get that. That's all true. But that doesn't excuse the officials from making the wrong call. I kind of hate it when people make that argument because, yes, you have, 50, 55, whatever, however much long you want to designate for it. You have that time in a game to go out and make up for it. That doesn't excuse a bad call. Like, this is a professional sport. These guys are paid to get calls right, and they should be held more accountable than they are to this, and we're going to get into that a little bit coming up. I mean, this is not just a conversation that happens in hockey with the NHL. All these professional sports are very, very sensitive when it comes to officials getting calls wrong and being criticized publicly for it. Should that be the case? Should officials in all sports be held more accountable? We're going to get into that next. You're listening to Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Alex Apple from Fox 17 News here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple from Fox 17 News. And we're talking about the controversy that was this weekend between the Nashville Predators and the Colorado Avalanche. Predators called for goaltender interference. Colin Blackwell sent to the box after it appeared they had tied the game 2-2 on a shot from Dante Fabbro in the third period that obviously, Alex, would have been very big in terms of the outcome of that game. Colorado ends up scoring another goal as an empty net goal. Shortly after that, Yarncroak scores a goal with like 1.7 seconds left to make it 3-2, which at that point, I mean, you have no chance to win. But it got us into discussion on sports as a whole, not even just specifically the NHL, but really every league. Should officials be held more accountable? We see this all the time. If you're in the NFL or the NBA, the NHL, MLB, whatever the case is, and the MLB may be the worst about this, but if you're a head coach or a player, and let's say something like Saturday night happens, you lose the game, and you can make a pretty good argument you lose the game because of a bad call. If you go out and publicly criticize it, you're going to get fined. The league is going to come down hard on you. It's like you can't even speak a bad word.
You have no means of recourse.
Of officials. I guess they'll come out maybe with an apology saying, you know, the wrong call was made. And if you're the team, you're like, well, thanks. We appreciate your apology. A world of good that does us now when we don't have the point that we need in the standings.
Right, just ask Saints fans about
that. I'm sure the apology went over very well for New Orleans Saints fans, and that made them feel a ton better about the call in the NFC Championship game last year. I think officials should be held more accountable. This is pro sports. Like, if you can't handle being criticized in pro sports, if you're a referee and you're getting paid pretty good money to officiate games and you can't handle being criticized, if you're a league and you can't handle your officials being criticized, that's soft. Like, just get out of here with that.
Would you rather us spend 30 minutes on morning drive on a Monday, on this fantastic rainy Mondays, talking about your officials or talking about the product on the ice?
Right.
Last weekend, or 2 weekends ago, they played the Blues. The Predators play great. We spend darn near an entire show talking about the product on the ice. It spreads the game. It can only be described as good for hockey. I'm not sure you describe this as good for hockey, this discussion. Now, I got a proposal for you. And there's one league in sports that does this, and it's not even a conference. This is a college. It's not even a league. This is a college conference. But they issue public statements for the following four reasons. And it's pretty broad when you think about the interpretation of this. This is my proposal for every league. This is the minimum. A game-ending call or a no-call impacting the result of the game. That's one. Pretty broad. Covers a lot of bases. A call involving a significant error in officiating mechanics. An official out of place. An official that accidentally impacts the game and then, you know, sort of convolutes that with a wrong call. In hockey, I guess it would be akin to, a player runs into an official, yep. Something of that nature. Call involving an error in rules interpretation or, and this is the other one, other extraordinary circumstances. Automatically, day of, or that evening, you get an official response, an official statement from that conference. This is how we interpret it. This was right or this was wrong. And bam, we move on. You say, yes, that was right or yes, that was wrong. We can call and wring our hands and if it was wrong and be upset about it, but you move on. At least you acknowledged it. If you're a Predators fan that spent $100 to go to that game on Saturday night, you get nothing.
No. And look, this is what I've said this for years. And this should be the case in the NHL. This should be the case in the NFL. Your head official should be available to the media after the game. I mean, it absolutely should be. And is that going to end up changing anything in terms of the result on the field or on the ice? No. But you should be held accountable for your actions. Just like when a player makes a mistake in a game or a coach makes a boneheaded call on fourth down, they have to answer questions about it. They have to be accountable for it. The officiating should be the same way.
That won't happen because he would have to review what happened, and he needs to talk with somebody in Toronto or someone in a league office that says, we missed that one. You know, the only thing worse than making a bad call would be the head official coming out afterwards and saying, oh, we stand by our call. Colin Blackwell made, contact of his own volition. He was not hit in any capacity into the goaltender. At least if you're going to at least make a statement, you get some sort of resolution, some sort of absolution as a fan, and then you move on. It's the Pac-12 that does that, by the way. I mean, when you think about any other extraordinary circumstances is one, or any game-ending call or no-call impacting the result of the game are two very broad areas. Under that umbrella, you always get some sort of answer from the league about its officiating. I think that's a great idea. And in fact, the bare minimum. Long before we get to the Wes McCauley's of the world speaking to you after the game, let's at least get a statement of some kind that gives, you know, the fans the due respect that they deserve. They spent $100. You buy a beer at that game, it's $11. You buy a hot dog, you buy a team jersey. I mean, you could have spent hundreds of dollars and you get nothing that sort of acknowledge. It'd be like if the microphone went out at a concert and then Lady Gaga walks off stage and doesn't say anything about it and you just go home. That there's no level of accountability in any other professional realm that matches the lack of accountability for officials.
No, I agree 100%. 615-737-1025. Should officials in professional sports be held more accountable than they are, and how should they be held?
And if you call in, I want to know how we should do it, right? If you're not happy with the statement involved and for those four tenants, how and then should we do it?
Nate from Nashville texts in and says, it seems like officiating in the NFL, NCAA football and basketball, and NHL has been pretty poor this year. Do you agree? Look, you were talking about this call right now. Have there been instances in the NHL this year where the officiating has been poor? Yeah. I think by and large, it's actually pretty good.
It's probably better than some other leagues on the whole.
I think by and large, in every professional sport, the officiating is pretty good. Now, Rex Road has been in here talking about the officiating in SEC basketball this year, and it's been awful. There's no question about it, and it's been consistently awful, and that's because they're running these officials into the ground, taking them night by night to different places and not really making them full-time.
The other problem is not having enough.
Yeah, I mean, that's a problem as well. But I think mostly the officiating has been
good. But the problem here with the NHL thing is there is a rule that can be fixed, that you cannot review that if a penalty is called. Why is that a rule?
Especially when you consider like the offside in the NHL, you can review it and look at it and okay, his skate blade was like a half an inch off the ice. Like think back to the Cup final in 2017 in Philip Forsberg in game one. The Predators scored a goal to go up 1-0 in game one. And Philip Forsberg, I guess there was like some Zapruder film footage that you could see.
It's unbelievable how
his skate blade is off the ice by maybe like half an inch. Did it have any impact on the play whatsoever? No, but they went back and reviewed it, and that's a gigantic call in the game that could have turned out to be different for the Predators in game one had they won that game and that call stands. This is, to me, is the same thing. If you could go back and review a play for being offside by half an inch of your skate blade being off the ice, you should be able to go back and review, okay, we have called a penalty on this play. Let's go back and, number one, review whether or not it should be a penalty. And number two, you can take a look at the goal that's scored after that. Like, for instance, this year in the NHL, anytime there's a major penalty assessed, you go back and look at it to make sure you got the call right and make sure it's a major penalty. The NHL needs to adopt that same strategy for this rule because the calls are just too big. Like, you can't have this happen at any point of the year, especially when you're a team like the Predators. You're fighting for your life to get in the playoffs. You're holding on to the second wild card spot by a thread. It just can't happen at this time of year.
You know what my problem with some of these official, and I'd have no idea how you would, you know, sort of determine what is impactful. That almost opens it up for too much interpretation where you can really get some wonky outcomes. But in the NFL, you know, Nate Davis gets called for a hold on a Derrick Henry 35-yard run, and Nate Davis was 12 yards behind the play when they called. No outcome, nothing discernible that impacted the play in any way. Philip Forsberg's skate is off the ice by a half of a millimeter. Does that really mess with the integrity of the game? No. But a guy backing into a player that hits the goalie and knocks his own goalie over, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
That, quite frankly, is something that's reviewable. It has a discernible impact on the game, and it is true to the integrity of the game.
Let's go to Bicycle Boy, who's called in wanting to weigh in on this topic. Bicycle Boy, go ahead. Thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, good morning, fellas. Here's my question. Toronto will review every goal, from what I understand. And it's clearly they do, because there are times when the puck goes in and comes out and the referees don't quite catch it. And Toronto buzzes the box and
right,
calls them over and says, hey, check this out. Why didn't Toronto buzz the box and have them review that? Because the puck was obviously in the net before we got checked into the goalie.
Thanks for the call, Bicycle Boy.
That's another great point.
Well, it is a great point, but the problem is once you're an official and you make the call of the penalty on the ice, you can't review it. They can't buzz down. They can't do anything about it because you've called the penalty.
We haven't even talked about the fact that the puck might have gone into the net before Blackwell made contact with the goaltender.
Right. I mean, it very
which
well
was bang bang at the very most generous interpretation of it.
It is, but once you make that call as an official, like for instance, if that same play happens and the official calls incidental contact and waves off the goal for goaltender interference, the first thing he's doing is skating over to the penalty box and they're reviewing that thing. Making the call to Toronto and they're going to take a look at it, and probably in that case, in my opinion, the goal gets overturned.
But Bicycle Boy makes a good point. I mean, let's just say, all right, would you hate this, Robbie? Consider this. If the puck goes in the net at any point, for any reason, that play can be reviewed. You know, if Dante Favreau's shot is way wide and you don't want to review whether that was goaltender interference, just make a call and let's move on. Right? But if the puck goes into the net, should be reviewable. And that's not that hard to change.
No. Got a text in from the text line. It says, make a count of all missed calls. The refs who make the most missed calls are demoted to the AHL. The best AHL crew is promoted to the NHL. That would be one way of holding officials accountable. And you see, there are some measures in place in every professional sport to hold officials accountable to a certain degree. They are reviewed for what they do on the ice. There is a committee involved in terms of, hey, the best crews get playoff games, playoff series. In the NFL, you see the best graded crew, it'll get the Super Bowl. Like, there are measures in place and incentives in place in order to get the call right. And look, I don't believe that officials are out there trying to mess things up.
Of course not.
But these rules should be in place to help them as well, because deep down, they don't want to have an impact on a game. The best officials out there on the ice, they want to never be seen or never be heard from, because that means that they're not having much of an impact on the game.
And I don't even care that an official gets suspended or sent down or whatever you want to, you know, talk about in that respect. What I care about is the league, because, and I say that because the league already reviews this kind of stuff.
Yeah.
The league knows which officials are doing well. They are graded. They are scrutinized. And those guys feel pressure to do well. They feel enough pressure at the very least. I want the integrity of the game to be protected. If you spent hundreds of dollars to go, which everyone that goes to a Predators game is now doing with the level of their pricing, you deserve a little bit better product and a little bit better accountability than just, by rule, that's not reviewable.
Yeah.
You know, the NFL is slowly taking away those by rule, unreviewable play, and the NHL should follow suit.
I agree. When we come back, it was a memorable day in our city on Saturday, a big game in Nashville between Nashville SC and Atlanta United. What are your thoughts on the response to that game? 615-737-1025. Were you there? What did you make of the atmosphere? We'll get into that next. But first, tonight, the Preds face off against the Edmonton Oilers at Bridgestone Arena. There's a Victor Arvidsson bobblehead giveaway to the first 8,000 fans, and players will be wearing camo jerseys for warm-ups that will be auctioned off during the game. See Leon Draisaitl and Connor McDavid, the two highest scorers in the NHL, which could be potentially a playoff matchup tonight against the Edmonton Oilers. Pre-game starts at 6 o'clock here on 102.5 The Game, and the puck drops at 7 p.m. We'll be back next on Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Man, what an atmosphere that was on Saturday night at Nissan Stadium. Nashville SC, Atlanta United. What were your thoughts? Were you there on Saturday night to watch that game? 615-737-1025. Call in with your thoughts on the atmosphere and in the game. You can give us a text as well at 615-737-1025. Alex Apple from Fox 17 alongside Robbie Stanley here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Alex, I thought from a simple performance standpoint, Nashville SC played much better than I expected. Atlanta United is a really, really good team in the MLS, and I thought Nashville SC in the first game especially gave them everything they could handle.
And I want to know if people call in, are you more likely to go back to a Nashville SC game because of the on-field product, to your point, played pretty well against one of the better teams, or because soccer sort of creates this community, this great atmosphere at the game that makes you want to be a part of that in some capacity? Now, I'm sure it could be a mix of both, but my guess is that more people want to go back, not for the on-field product, at least not yet. More people want to go back because they want to be a part of that community. So my takeaway, regardless of the outcome on the field, in which Nashville allows only two or three shots, but they both go in, essentially, you've created a community, or you've put people on notice, because we're sitting here talking on a Monday morning about 55,000 in Nissan Stadium for a soccer game, for a soccer team that has never played before. And that's a way to attract more fans and get the sort of quote-unquote T-shirt fan to want to be a part of that community. That all you have to do, go on Twitter, Facebook, wherever you find your news, look up Walker Zimmerman's first goal and watch the reaction in the stands. I mean, there's smoke going off. People are, you know, going crazy. There's scarves flying everywhere. Incredible. It's great to see.
You got to dodge those smoke bombs in the stand.
Is it literally a smoke bomb?
They like pull the thing, man. Yeah, I've been in there for some USL games. I don't think it's an actual smoke bomb, but it's like, I mean, there are smoke.
It's like
and
something
steam
you hold in your hand.
It's awesome. I mean, you get a face full of that thing.
Can I take that to Bridgestone? I'm going to go to Bridgestone and bring one of those the next time.
You may be incarcerated if you do that. I'm not sure if that's going to work.
That's the only thing missing from I Like It, I Love It coming on. A few smoke bombs going off.
Nashville SC controlling owner John Ingram will join us at 8 o'clock here on the show, so really looking forward to that. The atmosphere was outstanding. As you mentioned, Alex, 59,000 people, more than 59,000 people at Nissan Stadium on Saturday night, a record in our city to watch a soccer game. Nissan Stadium, I thought, looked really cool, both in person, just walking around the venue on Saturday before the game, and also on television as I was watching the game in the press box at Bridgestone Arena. It just looked really, really cool. Nashville SC coach Gary Smith, who joined our show on Friday, was asked about the atmosphere and whether or not Nashville SC made a good impression on the field after the game on Saturday night. Here's what he had to say.
Listen, when you lose, there's always that deflating feeling. It tends to blunt some of the good things that have gone on. I need to go away and evaluate the group fully as to really how we performed. I would say, emotionally sitting here, that we gave a good account of ourselves. Should we have got something out of the game? I believe so. So that'll always be disappointing. As far as the occasion goes, I don't think we could have asked much more of the fans that turned up, supported us, the atmosphere that was created, you know, the opportunity for the players to perform in front of such a great environment and crowd. I felt as though they rose to it. It was a quick game, it was a competitive game, and there was some terrific football from both sides. I felt if there's a way of creating that week in, week out, I'm sure it'll be a massive asset for us.
So obviously, the result aside, losing the game, I thought other than that, everything went about as well as you could have hoped for if you're a Nashville SC. And even the result of the game, you lose 2-1. I think most people, if they were being honest with themselves, probably felt like Atlanta United would come in here and they maybe wouldn't win by 2 or 3 goals, but they would control the game for the most part. They would dominate possession. They would dominate in terms of the chances and the scoring chances. It really didn't happen all that much on Saturday night. I think if you're Nashville SC, you got to feel real good about that.
The key for me is the one. They got that first goal. That's a monkey off the back. It's just like going to a hockey game. You want them to get one because you go there for that celebration, that community. That's how you build fans. I mean, the videos of the stands, incredible. If you were there, I'm curious. If you were there, I would love to know what the best part of the in-game environment was. How was the production of it? 737-1025, the number.
Yeah, Patrick writes in on Twitter and says, it felt like a hockey atmosphere in a football stadium. The back line did work all night and kept the noise level high. The last 15 minutes when NSC was pushing really hard were playoff level intense, A++. We got a text in on the text line. It says, the NSC game was fantastic. Took my 25-year-old daughter to their first soccer match, and she loved it. She was surprised at how exciting it was and now is convincing her fiancé that he has to go to games now too. We stood the entire match, and not one person around us complained. No one wanted to sit. It was so exciting. I do wonder if that was your first game, first time ever going to a soccer game on Saturday night. I think that environment, the atmosphere, how well the team played in the game, I think can go a long way towards building that fan base up. And they can do it pretty quickly here in Nashville.
And it becomes interesting because if you are not just a soccer fan, of which some people are, like a purely soccer fan, but if you're considering how you're going to spend your dollar here in Nashville, those Nashville SC games right now are a third to a half as expensive as most Titans and Preds tickets. Would you rather go to 3 Nashville SC games, or would you rather go to one hockey or NFL game. That is why the atmosphere, all of the production, the massive front office staffs that these teams have now is so important, because you are really fighting now in Nashville for that sports dollar. Now, that's not to say that Nashville can't support every one of those teams just fine. But Nashville SC put out a pretty nice opening act, and, you know, it's sort of like, all right, that puts you on the map, and now we're talking about it, and it's something worth spending your dollar on.
Yeah, and I'm going to say this. Don't lose interest so quick, because Nashville SC does not play at home again until the 21st of March.
Yeah, against Columbus.
It's a long time from now, so, you know, don't lose your interest just yet. They got two games on the road, so, and they'll be back at home on the 21st.
I think they're on ESPN against Portland, aren't they?
Yes. Yeah. So don't lose the interest, and that's going to be in. It could go either way. It can go one way to where you're kind of like, ah, they haven't been here in a while, and you kind of start losing that interest. But there's also that, you know, they haven't played in a while. That first game was pretty fun. I'm looking forward to the next, and you're kind of anxious to see that in the next 2 weeks or so. So don't lose interest just yet. I know they're on the road, and, you know, it's going to be a while before they play again at Nissan Stadium. But, you know, hey, keep the interest alive.
Munson, did it bother you at all that there was the Atlanta chants going on and everything? I mean, 25,000
No, because I think that, and see, I always say this about
soccer.
That almost
makes it more fun, right?
Yeah, soccer has a unique fan base, and I think even when you bring in, and we talked to a lot of, like, Nashville SC fans when I was at the tailgates, and I talked to a lot of Atlanta United fans, and it's never any personal. It's never anything personal, except if Cincinnati comes out of here. It may end up being that way. But, you know, it's never personal. It's always, you know, it's always respect for the fan base and that comes into your city. And vice versa, same thing when Nashville SC was going on the road in USL. So it's like a competitive nature even in the stands, on the field, to where you're getting these dueling chants, and you're getting, you know, this is our home. Like, we're going to chant louder than you. And, like, hey, we're the road team, but we're going to make ourselves known. And that's what makes soccer so unique, and that's what makes these atmospheres so fun. So I think it's good for the sport, actually, because it's just like, it's fun. I want to be out there. Like I said, I think I found a designated spot that I can go on the, like, watch the game in the stands, but I can't give away my designated spot.
Yeah, you can't
spot.
Be giving away locations here, Munson.
But I do have a spot that I think I can go to. That
kudos to you. After one game, you've already perfected that.
Yeah, you got
to. There's
walk
an around. Art to that.
Yeah, you got
to
walk around, man. You got to, you know, scope out the scenery a little bit.
Absolutely.
I had my Kyrie's on, so I was able to run.
He did. I saw him. I saw Munson on Saturday. He was looking fresh, let me tell you.
Well, you got to look good to fan good.
Yeah, you got to look good. You know, I don't like wearing dress shoes because, like, and you know this, you guys know this, you guys cover sports and, you know, everything else. So I just don't like wearing dress shoes because if I need to move, like, I like to move quick. I like to walk fast. I got long legs. I got Giselle legs. So I like pretty quick. So I like the Kyrie's helped me be able to move around Nissan Stadium pretty quick rather than wearing, like, some Stacey Adams.
You didn't see Giselle at the game, did you?
I didn't, but no. George Kittle was there.
Yeah, he was.
Yeah, Chase Rice was there, too.
George Kittle, a big Nashville sports fan. Loves Philip Forsberg.
Kittle and
Nashville
Gronk
SC.
Are both spending as much time in Nashville as they can.
That's right.
Could happen.
Speaking of Giselle, her husband was back in the news this weekend with a FaceTime call with Titans head coach Mike Vrabel. We'll ask our good buddy Corey Curtis about that. Coming up next, Corey Curtis from News 2 will join us. Robbie Stanley alongside Alex Apple. Here on Morning Drive on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Tyler Reddick here from 2311 Racing. Another checkered flag for the books. Time to celebrate with Chumba. Jump in at ChumbaCasino.com. Let's Chumba.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. CTNCs 21 plus. Sponsored by Chumba Casino.
This year, experience the NHL playoffs your way. Want to watch a single? Do or Die Game 7, a full week of heavy-hitting back-and-forth series. Then check out Sling's 1-3 and 7-day passes. Watch The Chase for the Cup on ESPN and TNT, starting as low as $4.99. No long-term contracts or overpaying. Just live hockey at home or when you want it. Sling lets you do that. Visit sling.com to learn more.
Want instant MVP status? Join the new Dick's Scorecard Plus program. For $99, Scorecard Plus members enjoy 1 year packed with perks, like $80 in annual bonus rewards, free shipping with no minimum purchase, triple points on two purchases, and more. That's over $160 in benefits. Join Dick's Scorecard Plus today and score more than ever. Tap the banner to learn more. Exclusions and terms apply. Visit Dick's.com/scorecardplus for details.